This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
This Pat the Cat situation is fascinating. Smalls is giving our producer, Pat Costello, major advice here. You're saying don't get the cat for Pat?
I don't want to disparage cat dads out there, single cat dads.
But
I have to say, I imagine if my girlfriends and I are at brunch and we're talking about a guy that one of my friends is dating and she's like, yeah, he's a cat dad. It has a certain connotation to it.
Red flag. That's blowing in the breeze.
However,
it's not a positive.
However, a dog, we're like, oh, what kind of dog is it? Where you say, oh, I'm dating a guy and he has a cat, we're like, oh.
So if Pat,
it's like, you know, if you're coming into the guy's life and the dog is there, then it's just like everybody's happy. But
yeah,
it's almost like if he's a cat dad, then you're in competition with the cat.
It's different personalities. Like a dog guy is like usually more happy-go-lucky, you know, maybe outdoorsy. A cat guy just kind of signifies...
catty.
He's just a little serial
more
killer.
He's a little more catty.
Nuno, man, oh man. Nuno just went in. A serial killer. Does the dog owner have the opportunity to interact with people in a way that they wouldn't otherwise?
Let me tell you something. Okay, if a guy goes on a walk with a dog, especially here in New York City, and it's a cute dog, girls are stopping look at the dog, pet the dog, ask you about the dog.
That sounds lovely. I live in Meriden, Connecticut. I don't think the pool is quite the same as New York City.
True, but I don't think girls are going to be excited to ask you about your cat.
It's a great point.
Oh, you can get a little leash and walk the cat. Be
Do
that guy.
Does the cat
walk
want you to
cat?
Walk the cat? I don't think anybody walks cats.
What about the guy who has the stroller for the dog, like John Calipari, who again this weekend, during the Mark Pope press conference at Kentucky, which was one of the great press conferences you've ever seen in your life, they sold out the arena, and he came out with a 96 championship team, which was just a badass move off the bus. As this was all going on, Calipari was walking the dog again with the stroller. Your favorite thing in the world, Cece, the dog and the stroller.
But the dog wasn't in the stroller.
He did it again.
Paul wasn't in the stroller.
Paul wasn't in the stroller. No,
yeah.
No.
By the way, some breaking news NFL. Adam Schefter, our very own great insider, who you'll hear with us tomorrow here on Unsportsmanlike, has reported that Colts and three-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle DeForest Buckner reached an agreement today on a two-year, $46 million contract extension that ties him to Indy through 2026.
Nice.
So they are locking up players this offseason, including Michael Pittman, their wide receiver. And, of course, Andrew Luck visited them over the weekend with Chuck Pagano for
a
charity event.
That was awesome
what they did.
I mean, the owner, Jim Irsay, telling them to knock down all of those faces on that wall for $1 million for cancer research. That was just phenomenal that Andrew Luck and Chuck Pagano were able to get that done in less than a minute. That was really, really cool.
Yeah. Really fun
one
video.
One of those moments that we love as NFL fans to see those people do something for a really good cause.
And I've said it once, and I'll say it again. I won't stop. I would take the massive risk if I was an NFL or college team and blindly offer Andrew Luck my head coaching position. I know that sounds crazy.
No, it doesn't. He was coaching high school in California, right?
That's not usually the precursor for an NFL job.
Of course, but I'm saying he's been in that space, the coaching space. It's not as if you're just saying he's never done it before, and because of what he was in the NFL, you're going to offer it to him.
I just think a lot of these college programs and NFL programs make the same hires over and over again.
Yeah.
I would take that risk.
Very different hiring somebody to do a high school job versus a college or pro job.
No doubt.
Very different.
No doubt. But we're talking about as brainiac as could be in Andrew Luck.
He's a smart guy.
I would
take
the risk.
Doesn't mean that he wants the commitment that it would take to do one of those jobs.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot of work. That's a lot. You're talking about 14-hour days. And for a guy like Andrew Luck that can make money a lot of other ways.
And that has other interests.
Yeah, I don't know that it was worth it for him.
And who's made a lot of money.
Who's made a lot of money and continues to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So just quickly, are you saying he makes more sense as like the team president versus the team coach kind of thing?
No, I'm saying he can make more money outside of football.
Just doing whatever he's doing.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. All right. We are on Sportsmanlike presented by Progressive Insurance. NBA playoffs are set. Western Conference definitely juicy. The Oklahoma City Thunder go from the number two pick a couple of years ago with Chet Holmgren, who was very proud of his 82 games played this year, put out a tweet expressing his patting on the back of himself for playing all 82. They go from number two overall to the number one seed. Denver drops down to the two seed in the tiebreak against Oklahoma City Thunder, where they get the winner of New Orleans and L.A. That would be the Lakers, as the Lakers beat the Pelicans yesterday. CeCe, your Lakers, if they win, they get a big win over New Orleans. They get the defending champs. Do they have a shot?
Yeah, I mean, they well, I mean, do they have the shot to get the win over the New Orleans?
No, over the Denver Nuggets.
Hell no. did you not see what happened in the conference finals last year?
I did.
They ain't even pitched the Nuggets. The Nuggets didn't feel threatened at all. It was like, yeah, sweep, get you out of here, get ready for the NBA finals against the – at least the Miami Heat put up more of a fight than the Los Angeles Lakers did. Like, it wasn't close. Why would I think that this year is going to be any different when the Nuggets have had more seasoning, more proof of concept that they could actually get this done, and Jokic is at the height of his powers? It ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen. As much as I want it for LeBron and AD, they need more on that team if they're going to get past Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. It's as simple as that. So I'll take away the theater. I'll take away the drama, the intrigue. If the Lakers beat the New Orleans Pelicans in the play-in on Tuesday, they will be summarily dismissed relatively early in the postseason by the Denver Nuggets. I would probably call it a gentleman's sweep just because the Nuggets would be getting warmed up for the playoffs. They wouldn't be humming and be, a couple of weeks into it like they matched up against the Lakers last year in the conference finals. But, yeah, that ain't going to be a long series if the Lakers play the Nuggets in the first round of the playoffs.
I hear you, and I feel the same way. But are we being too dismissive of LeBron James? I know that Jokic is absolutely dominant. This team now has championship DNA. We saw this matchup last year, but this is still someone that we consider to be the second best player to ever play this game. And despite maybe not having the requisite cast around him and despite being at a certain point in his career, is it foolish for us to dismiss LeBron in that way?
Yes, I think so. And I'm not as big of a LeBron fan as others may be. I mean, this is a guy that has averaged 25-plus for the 20th straight season, if I'm not mistaken. And yesterday, racking up a triple-double in his final game of the season to guarantee that they will have two shots at the play-in and not just one. Mm-hmm. Do I think they're going to beat Denver? I'm not saying they're going to beat Denver, no. Do I think they'd be in better shape to actually lose the play-in? Yeah, I don't know how you go about that because it's a massive risk. You have an off night in the 9-10 matchup, or when you play the 9-10 winner, and then the next time you play, LeBron twists an ankle early on, all of a sudden you're going home, right? You can't take that risk. But if I told you, theoretically, the Los Angeles Lakers, when this week is over, would have a 7-game series against the Oklahoma City Thunder, many people understandably would pick the Lakers to win that series.
So what would you do? Sit Anthony Davis?
Could you imagine
with the back spasm?
Imagine they sit both of them. Like, we're good.
Oh.
They would never. I'm kidding, kind of. But like, they would never.
I was gonna say, are you?
I mean, let's be real, right? If you're gonna play the Nuggets, you're a cat person. If you're gonna play the Thunder, you're a dog person. You got a shot if you're the dog person. You have no shot if you're the cat person.
That's exactly right.
But you're.
I mean, let's be honest,
exactly right?
But if you're on a collision course to be a cat person, shouldn't you just accept your fate anyway?
No,
because you're a dog.
Because anything can happen to the Nuggets between now and when you eventually play them. That's why you try to put it off as long as
you
can. That's
a fair point. That's a fair point. You never know what could happen.
You can't tank, obviously. Well, unless you're the Cavs. But you can't tank a play-in game. But they would have...
It's a risk.
Bold strategy, Cotton.
They would have probably been better off in the 9-10. Think about it.
You want two opportunities to win one game.
I hear you, but you also want an opportunity to play in June. You're telling me as a Lakers fan that watches the Lakers
I don't think either scenario they're going to have an opportunity to play in June. Because one side of the bracket, you got the Denver Nuggets. The other side of the bracket, you got the Dallas Mavericks. I just don't trust either one of those situations with the Lakers.
Okay, I can't believe I'm about to defend LeBron here. Let me challenge you on this.
Please,
by all means. You're telling me you would give the Los Angeles – well, there's a conference – the conference finals start in June or late May because we're going to go in semantics here. Let's just say getting to the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me if the Los Angeles Lakers were the eighth seed, like the actual eighth seed when it's all said and done, and they had Oklahoma City in the first round and the winner of the Clippers and the Mavs in the second round, that they would have no shot of getting to the conference finals?
No, no shot.
I disagree. I think they would have a shot. I think Denver is the team you want to avoid, obviously. And if you could avoid Denver until the conference finals, I don't think the Los Angeles Lakers would ever be afraid of Oklahoma City. And I think especially
you've
if you
already established you ain't got to be afraid to get your ass kicked.
I know.
Well established that on the show.
I get it. But I also think that if you played the Clippers in the second round of the playoffs and you didn't have to travel and the wear and tear on LeBron's body and all this stuff, like, it's right there for you.
Yeah,
they could potentially get to the conference finals.
Here's the thing. I don't think they're going to play the Clippers. I think it's going to be the Dallas Mavericks. And they're not good against the Dallas Mavericks. Mm. They've won one game against the Dallas Mavericks this season. Not great. Not great. Well, I guess they've won zero games against the Denver Nuggets, so that's even worse. But, I mean, either scenario, I just don't see the Lakers getting to the conference finals. because I don't think they're getting through Dallas if they're on the other side of the bracket. And if they stay on where they're at right now and they win the 7-8 matchup with the New Orleans Pelicans, they're not going to beat Denver.
It's a tough road.
No, it's going to be an early exit. They're not getting to the conference finals. It's not going to happen.
I will say I would not be surprised on the other side of the bracket if Phoenix beats Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, Phoenix has had Minnesota's number. I think that's just a bad matchup for Minnesota. We'll see what happens. Playoffs are different. We'll see what happens with Karl-Anthony Towns and whether or not he's going to be able to be a factor. But, yeah, that's just a bad matchup for the T-Wolves. Now, got a little spicy in yesterday's game,
the back and forth with Ant-Man and Bradley Beal,
so maybe that carries over.
Yeah.
I'm here for all of that once we get to the playoffs because, you know, we've seen it be too chummy in years past in the regular season. Mm-hmm. I like the venom, the vitriol that these teams potentially have when they get into these playoff scenarios and they're sending people home. So
agreed.
I'm excited about that matchup. I think that's probably the one series that I look at it can go either way. When we start looking at all of the first round matchups, like that's the series that I think can go either way, more so than any of the other ones.
Really? The Clippers Mavs?
No.
Oh, I think the Clippers are going to win that series.
No.
I know I'm in the minority on that
one.
Yeah,
you absolutely are. Yeah.
What about this? Does the league right now, if you said to Adam Silver, you could pick the commissioner of the NBA, you could pick what you want in terms of the matchups here. Would they want a Lakers Warriors do or die matchup for the eighth seed, or would they want both of them in?
Probably both of them in. Right? More opportunities for people to watch those two teams with all the star players on them. Right?
Yeah, I mean, you want both of them in.
I'm a little upset personally that we don't have a Lakers-Warriors match. Like, I would have loved the Lakers-Warriors 7-8 matchup.
Yeah, that would have been great.
And, so both of them have a chance to get in?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you want to see them going up against each other, which they've done a few times now in the play-in. But Sacramento goes to the Warriors. The Lakers are going to be in New Orleans for a week, it feels like, at this point. So those are your two matchups there. Are we sliding any of the other teams? We've talked about all the teams in the Western Conference. I guess Sacramento and New Orleans, are we sliding them at all, not bringing them up as upset candidates here? We brought up the Lakers, we brought up the Warriors, we brought up the Suns.
I was just thinking about that and figuring out which one, if I were going to pick one, would have a chance to be able to get in. And I guess it had to be New Orleans, right? They've just got to win one game against the Lakers.
Yeah, but do you give them a shot then? Well, no shot against Denver, obviously, in that scenario. But I'm saying, could you, if you think Oklahoma City, because of lack of experience, is vulnerable, do you think that either one of those, Sacramento or New Orleans, could upset Oklahoma City in the first round? I don't.
No.
I only see a veteran-laden team that could potentially upset them.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
So, yeah, we have written off New Orleans and Sacramento. Sorry to both of those cities and those teams. They have been
sorry,
written
not
off.
Sorry. It is what it is. See you next year.
On further review next.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio. Now that the weekend is over, it's time to look back and break it down.
Without further ado, let's get this thing kicked off.
This is a Punt Further Review.
After further review,
a little farther.
With Chris Canty.
So we got a little bit of a delayed Upon Further Review today. I mean, usually we do this at 6:30 on Monday morning, but we're doing it at 8:15. On Monday morning, a little delayed version, but just because it's late doesn't mean it's not good. We had to let this thing bake for a little bit, but now we're ready to roll.
Keep the people waiting.
That's it. Build the suspense. Build the drama.
I love it.
Kind of like the NBA playoffs. Well, except for the games that the Lakers are in. Okay. She is Michelle Smallman. He is Evan Cohen. I am Chris Canty. And this is Upon Further Review, Masters Edition. And speaking of Augusta National, Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters, second time in 3 years that he's won the tournament. He's regarded as golf's best ball striker since prime Tiger Woods. And Sunday, he had only one major championship, which is why a lot of people had a lot of doubt. But this guy finally got his second major, just so happens to be his second green jacket. So there's no reason to doubt that he's the next generational star in the sport. At 27 years old, he became the fourth youngest golfer to win multiple green jackets and has done so in the second fewest starts. He's only had 5 starts at Augusta. In the past 35 days, Scottie Scheffler has won 3 times against an elite field at Bay Hill with the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Players at TPC Sawgrass, and now the Masters at Augusta National. This dude is on one, to say the least. He is the best golfer in the world, and I don't know that number 2 is particularly close.
He is the guy that everyone anticipated would win and did win, and that doesn't happen often. The way in which he was such a great favorite and then came in there and actually did it. Final round, 68, 6 of his last 11 holes birdies, 7 birdies overall on the final round, and enters in with a 3-way tie and wins by 4.
And not only did everyone anticipate that he would win, he did so and maintained composure where throughout this weekend at Augusta National, there was weather, there was disruptions, his wife could potentially go into labor at any moment. None of that affected Scottie Scheffler at all. His peers around him certainly fell apart at times, not him.
Yeah, absolutely dominant what Scottie Scheffler was able to do. And he's probably the star that golf needs right now, with so many of the premier players defecting to the LIV Golf Tour. To have a PGA Tour guy be at the pinnacle of the sport right now and be the world number one unquestioned, I think is a good thing for the health of a sport that has had so much disruption over the last couple of years.
Yeah, we need a dominant golfer.
Exactly, exactly. He might not be the hero they want, but he's the hero they need. Next.
Number 2.
The NBA playoff field is set and the Sixers are locked into the number 7 seed in the play-in tournament. Currently, they have the 3rd best odds in the Eastern Conference to win the title at plus 1,800. If the standings hold serve, Philly would play the Knicks. Clearly, expectations for Sixers in the postseason are bigger than the statue of Allen Iverson that they unveiled at the practice facility this weekend.
That was one of the weirdest things. It was so tiny. And I texted somebody that works in and around the NBA, and I'm like, did they put it at the practice facility because of his famous rant? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, because they have all of their statues
legends
there
at the practice facility.
Because they're changing arenas, I guess, at some point. But this is in Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah.
So the fans aren't even going to see it. And even if you go see it, where is it? It's the tiniest statue. I understand Iverson was small, but not that small.
Yeah.
It looks like a trophy, not a statue.
The memes are hilarious.
The memes were great. But just, you see the sheet over the statue and you expect this big dramatic reveal, and then he pulls the sheet off the statue and you kind of squint a little bit like, that's it?
Yeah, I don't understand why they went through all the hoopla for that. Like, we didn't have to have a whole ceremony for this, dog. You could have just put that up there and said, hey, we got a statue of you. Here's a picture of it. Like, yeah. I don't understand it. Like, and for it to be that small and for it to be at the practice facility and not the arena, stop being cheap, Sixers. Like,
but they may be moving. That's why.
I don't give a damn if they're moving. Just move the statue when you move.
Exactly. And that doesn't explain why
we've seen
it was
a lot of
statues
moving the last couple of years around America. You can move the statue. It's okay. It's okay. You can move the statue to your new arena whenever you build it. It's okay. But for the statue to be that small and to be nondescript at the practice facility? Come on, man.
Yeah, I didn't love that.
It's ridiculous.
I think it's also a great story, I must say, considering for those who are much younger, Allen Iverson was not trending towards statue guy with Philadelphia. There were a lot of people that were anti-Iverson, saying, oh, he's a troublemaker. I think everybody realizes later in life, he wasn't that much of a troublemaker. Allen Iverson was a good dude who played his butt off for the Philadelphia 76ers, and they should honor him, no doubt.
He had some problems in high school and college. He had some problems.
But not with them.
No, not with the Sixers, no. Yeah. He has some problems back in the day, but you know, put that stuff behind him when he became a professional. Good on Allen Iverson. Next.
Number one.
The Patriots are open for business with the third overall pick. Not sure how many different ways they got to tell us before people start believing it. Robert Kraft said recently that the number three overall pick is an advantageous position to be in because teams behind New England could be really desperate to move up. Gerard Mayo said if someone offers a bag, they'd have to talk about it, meaning the compensation to move up to the number three overall pick. And now, Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy, the fourth best quarterback prospect in this class, is in New England meeting with the Patriots today. I get it. Due diligence is one thing, but to use a top 30 visit on J.J. McCarthy when you have the third overall pick means you'll consider trading down. I don't think it means you take McCarthy over the third quarterback on the board, whether that's Jaden Daniels or Drake May. And former GM Rick Spielman used the Minnesota Vikings as an example and said for a trade package, it would have to start with two 2024 first-round draft picks, that being number 11 and number 23, a 2025 first-round draft pick, and a future second-round pick. That's an expensive trade package that Minnesota would have to offer up or any other team would have to offer up to move up to the third overall pick. But you can't really put a price on finding your franchise quarterback. Mm-hmm. And looking at where the New England Patriots roster is right now, they're not ready to draft their franchise quarterback.
Okay, let's do it this way. Let's do a who says no on this based on what you just presented, okay?
What's up?
So I'm going to make multiple deals here, but they're all deals that we've discussed. 11, this is Minnesota offers 11, 23, their 25 first, and their 26 second to New England for number three. Who says no?
Nobody.
Okay. New England then takes 11, 23, and a 26 second to the Chargers for five. Who says no?
Ooh. I think the Patriots would say no.
Why? They would get the fifth pick in the draft and an extra first rounder next year.
Yeah, but I don't think they need to use that draft capital. Who are they moving up to?
J.J. McCarthy.
They don't have to move up to five to get McCarthy.
Well, then you're banking on him at 11.
I don't think you have to bank on him at 11. I just don't think you have to pay that price to move up to five.
Okay, so 11 and 23 for five.
I still don't think you have to pay that to move up to five.
11 and a 26 second.
Here's my point. I don't think you have to get to five to get J.J. McCarthy. I know that Jeremy Fowler was just on with us in the 7 o'clock hour, and he said that a lot of people are anticipating that J.J. McCarthy would probably go in the top six. I'm not one of those people. I think J.J. McCarthy goes a lot closer to 10 than he does at five.
Conceptually, if the Patriots don't think that they should take a quarterback at number three, but can get to five and pick up an extra first and still have the option of taking McCarthy, that for me is intriguing.
What about the Giants at six?
McCarthy?
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy said that the Giants might look to trade down to pick up more draft capital.
Okay, so then do it that way. 11 and 23 for six. Who says no?
I think the Patriots would say no. That's rich. 11 and 23 for six? No.
You're 11 and a future second?
Yeah, I could see that. I can see that.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. The other thing that Fowler said to us, which was interesting, is that he thinks that Arizona could trade out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of rumors about does Marvin Harrison Jr. want to play for the Colts also.
I just don't think Arizona.
Meaning also as that, in addition
would,
to his
that,
dad.
That would make sense. He wants to play for the franchise that his dad played for. But I just don't see Arizona being able to find somebody that they could trade out of four with. I don't think quarterbacks go off the board 1, 2, 3, 4. I also don't think that all three of those top picks are going to be original draft choices, meaning I think somebody is going to trade down, and the most likely candidate would be the Patriots.
But based on what Fowler told us and our initial gut feelings here for a week and a half from now when we're in Detroit, it is not unreasonable to think three could be traded, four could be traded, and five could be traded, and it doesn't all have to be for quarterbacks.
I agree with that.
Right, so we're looking at three, four, and five. Potentially all could be moved. Mm-hmm. Four would more likely than not have to be for a quarterback, unless... Is there a deal the Buffalo Bills could make that absolutely blows Arizona out of the water to get to four to take Marvin Harrison Jr.? Now, that's all the way from 28. I'm saying some ridiculous deal.
What do they have that Arizona would want? That would
future
be...
first is the only thing that I could bring up. Yeah, but I don't even know that you could do that.
I'm just sitting there thinking about,
I
don't know, what do they have that somebody would want? Like, I would feel like a deal of that magnitude for them to move up from 28?
28, yeah. 28 to 4 is unheard of,
yeah,
right?
That's a huge jump.
But I'm just throwing that out there of a team that would, if Marvin Harrison Jr. theoretically started to fall and you're Buffalo and you're thinking about moving up for a wide receiver, you got to have that conversation. Do we go all in and go nuts here? And do we give Josh Allen Marvin Harrison Jr.? Just throwing that out there.
I think that they're probably exploring every possible option.
I wouldn't do it, but I wonder if they're having that conversation in Buffalo. Coming up, that's it, right, for Upon Further Review?
That's it. Sure.
Okay.
That is Upon Further Review. Yeah.
Got it. All right. So coming up, we talked about the Western Conference. Eastern Conference, very interesting yesterday. Did the Knicks make a mistake getting the 2 seed? Yes, you heard me right. We'll get to that next. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
New York Knicks, the 2 seed, after their win yesterday over the Chicago Bulls. But because it went into overtime, it finished later than any of the other early games yesterday in the NBA. And many of them that impacted all of this were either blowouts or you knew what was happening. You know, the Cavs basically tanked it to make sure that they were not going to face Philadelphia or anybody that they thought was as competitive. They're facing Orlando in the 4-5 matchup. Miami pulled away from Toronto yesterday. There was all blowouts left and right, right? And then Philadelphia blew out the Nets. So the Knicks had an opportunity, guys, to basically say, you know what, let's shut it down here. Let's let the Bulls win. We get the 3 seed. We face Indiana. They did not do that. They played into overtime. Dante DiVincenzo played an insane amount of minutes. Jalen Brunson was great, as he's been all year, MVP candidate. And now they're going to face the winner of Miami and Philadelphia. Tim Legler came in here and said maybe it was a mistake. Do we think it was a mistake doing what the Knicks did yesterday, Smalls?
I don't. I love that mentality. I love their bravado in this instance where they say, we want to continue to win games. We want to put ourselves in a position to have a higher seed because it doesn't matter who our opposition is. We are confident in ourselves and how we've been playing. And I think that's a winner's attitude. I know on paper, it doesn't seem like the smart move because you have what is likely to be a tougher opponent, but I don't know. I think that if you really think that you could be a championship team, you should think that you could beat anybody. So I absolutely loved this move by the Knicks.
Yeah, I like the move by the Knicks too. And let's not assume that this is going to be a pushover opponent for the Philadelphia 76ers. I mean, these two teams played back in January 5th, and they were both full strength. Embiid was on the court for the Sixers, and the Knicks smoked them. I mean, I think they beat them 128-97, something like that. So, like, that wasn't a competitive game. And Jalen Brunson was also on one that won. The final score, 128-92. And that wasn't a competitive game. And Jalen Brunson scored 29 points. So, I mean, it's not as if the Knicks can't find a way to make this series spicy, mm-hmm. right? And we're talking about the best player on the court for the series. Even though Embiid is the best talent, the way that Jalen Brunson is playing right now, averaging 37 points a game over the last 10, and has, what, 11 consecutive games where he scored north of 30? I just don't think it's fair to assume that he can't take over a game, take over this series, because he's been just that good. And I get it. What it looks like, the optics, the package of Jalen Brunson is not what you would assume an elite-level player to be, but make no mistake about it, he is elite right mm-hmm. now. He is one of the best players in the Eastern Conference field. And like Legs just said when he was on with us in the 7 o'clock hour, when you start going down the list of players in the Eastern Conference that you would take over the way that Jalen Brunson is playing right now, that is a very short list.
He's been great. I'm not doubting that at all. And the Knicks are a likable team. The Knicks play hard. You're not going to be shortchanged with effort at any given point. But I don't know that yesterday was the right move for them. I just really don't. I don't think the concept of playing Miami or Philadelphia in the first round makes any sense for them versus playing Indiana. I just don't.
But how is it beneficial to let the opposition know that you're scared, that you don't think it's a good matchup for you?
I don't think it's letting them know that you're scared. I think, hey, our starters got a workout today. They played a half or whatever it is, and now they're going to go and rest. Like, we're getting ready for the postseason. We don't care about our seating.
But by saying we don't care about your seating, it's not that you're really saying you want your starters to get rest. It's because you're trying to avoid what you think is going to be a dangerous opponent.
Well, let's see. You're playing the defending MVP, potentially, in Joel Embiid from a year ago. You're playing a team that Joel Embiid is not even currently the best player on it the way that they're playing. He is the best player on it. But Maxey's been insane how good he's been.
Sure.
Way better coach than they have been in years past with Nick Nurse. And really deep and versatile. I just think Philadelphia is coming into their own at the right time. I don't think anyone wants to play this Philadelphia team. I would avoid them at all costs right now.
I think most teams in the Eastern Conference feel the way you just said, with the exception of the New York Knicks. They are the one team that truly does not care who their matchup is, because that's not the mentality that Tom Thibodeau has ingrained in this squad. And you see it game after game. Like, they show up with the same type of mentality. They are going to grind you down. They're going to play really good defense. Now, of late, they've been able to turn their defense into instant offense, which makes things easier for Jalen Brunson. But you got a lot of guys that can make things really, really interesting. Like, the addition of OG Anunoby gives this team a level of defensive versatility that they just did not have before. Previously, it had to be Josh Hart matching up with the best player, whether it was the two, three, or four for the opposing team. Now, you can throw Josh Hart and OG Anunoby at the two stars on the opposing team, and you get to relieve some of that pressure on the defensive end for DiVincenzo and Jalen Brunson, which changes things completely for what the Knicks do in terms of how they play. So, I just think that this is going to be a tough matchup for the Sixers, tougher than even they expected based on how the last couple of weeks have been trending.
Let me be fair, because you're right about what you're saying. I don't think anyone wants to voluntarily play the Knicks either.
No.
And isn't that their mentality, that everyone's saying you should avoid the Sixers, and they're thinking everyone should avoid us. Look at how we've been playing. Look at the pieces that we have in place. And I love that mentality.
Here's the difference, though. If you told me the Knicks won a championship this year, I'd be stunned. If you told me the Sixers won a championship this year, I would say it's about time. There's a difference. I think the Sixers have championship aspirations because of who their best player is when everything is going right, which is Embiid, and Maxey's awesome. But I have a question for you guys on this then. If you're going to be, if you're going to defend the Knicks, which is totally fair, are you ready to destroy the Cavs? Because the Cavs went the other way. The Cavs said, I know we're playing one of the worst teams in the league, in the Hornets. We're basically going to tank it because we want to avoid the good teams at all costs.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's the wrong mentality. And I think that the Cavs have a little bit more self-awareness in saying that we don't think that that's a good matchup for us. But I don't really have expectations for the Cavs in the playoffs where I do the Knicks.
Well, but the Cavs could get to the second round and the Knicks may get bounced in the first round. Like, I know you're picking CC Orlando, but if the Cavs,
the Cavs could get bounced too.
But if the Cavs,
their best player doesn't want to be there. Sorry, Rob. Their best player doesn't want to be there.
Sorry, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, Rob,
Rob, our social and digital guy.
He's a Cavs fan.
Yeah.
And Donovan Mitchell doesn't want to be there. He's being held hostage.
He's a Cavs fan, but I don't know if we have Rob Cam available. The hat he's wearing looks like a Cavs hat, but it's not a Cavs hat. Shouldn't he now wear the Cavs hat?
Well, it says Midwest Kids, and the Cavs are in the Midwest.
I don't know that you want to be repping for the Cavs right now based on what we think they're going to do in the playoffs. It's not going to be great.
They're still in the playoffs, though.
They're in the playoffs.
That is, for those watching on ESPN, that is not
a
Cavs hat.
They're here for a good time, not a long time.
Oh, wait, he does have a Cavs logo tattooed on his arm, though.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the Larry O trophy on it. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, okay. All right, is there anybody else in the East that you think, outside of Philadelphia, who we've established here, is there anybody that you could see knocking off Boston? Are you at a place where if Giannis is healthy, you could see Milwaukee doing it? Could you see Miami, who's done it twice recently, knocking off Boston? Or is it Philadelphia or bust in terms of the Celtics right now?
It feels like Philly or bust. I know that Miami did it last year, and earlier I was trying to get you to take the bait to say, well, we have the evidence that they were able to turn the Jets on in the postseason. Jimmy Butler certainly becomes Jimmy Butler in the playoffs, but I just don't know if we'll be able to see anyone outside of the 76ers with the way that they're constructed take down Boston. But I don't even think that they should be in that conversation. If Boston is as good as we think that they are, they should easily get to the NBA Finals, despite Philadelphia being a very, very tough opponent if they get to that point.
I don't know, man. I mean,
okay, can you stop for 1 second? I know where you're going to go. I know where he's going. I know him well enough now.
I don't know,
okay,
man.
He's tempted to actually say Miami could do it.
No.
Oh, I don't know him that well at all.
No. No.
I thought you were ready to say Miami could knock them off.
No, I was just going to say that if...
I saw the look.
If the Knicks are somehow able to get past the Sixers, mm-hmm. and knowing that...
The Knicks?
I must be drinking the blue Kool-Aid. It's orange and blue skies, but I mean, this Knicks team is scary to me just because of how they play and how good Jalen Brunson is. This Knicks team is scary, man.
All right, here's how you could spin that.
And they have zero fear factor when it comes to the Boston Celtics.
They have zero fear factor with anybody.
Zero fear factor. Like, I mean, I'm just talking about the last several years. I mean, they've seen Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. There's zero fear factor there. Now, Boston has taken care of their business against the Knicks this season, mm-hmm. but it hasn't always been that way in the regular season. But those two teams match up. I'm just saying, if we get to the playoffs, if we get to a conference finals and those two teams are squaring off against each other, I know the Knicks won't wilt under the pressure, under the lights. I can't say the same for the Boston Celtics. I just can't. The only problem is the Knicks have no answer for Kristaps Porzingis, so I don't know how they would deal with that part of the matchup. But from everything else, I mean, I think the Knicks, that's a team. That would be a long series if they play each other in the conference finals. There is no doubt about it in my mind. Like, nobody is sweeping anybody. There's not going to be a gentleman sweep. That is going 6 or 7 games.
The spin, I think, on that would be OG can guard Tatum, Hart can guard Brown. They have guys that can directly match up man-to-man against the
Celtics.
But
you have nothing for KP.
Robinson and Hartenstein?
I like Hartenstein. Not for KP. That's tough.
Coming up, all the
small things.
Next, we're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It is time for all the small things here on Unsportsmanlike. I am Michelle Smallman alongside Evan Cullen and Super Bowl champion Chris Canty. And that intro reminded me that I saw Blink-182 at Coachella last year, and they were awesome. Mm-hmm. Did you guys see any of the footage coming out of Coachella this year? This is not one of the small things. I just wanted to ask.
I have not.
I saw Jaden Smith and Justin Bieber. That went viral. I saw Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift in the crowd, like as regular fans.
Yep, which was very cool.
I saw...
But with a bodyguard.
Somebody, who was it, that announced they weren't going this year and it was a big deal. The one who's married to the Pirates player.
Vanessa Hudgens?
Vanessa Hudgens.
She's pregnant.
Maybe that's why she wasn't going.
That's probably why.
Right.
The best thing I saw was Lana Del Rey's entrance. She was on the back of a police motorcycle, and they were playing a remix of Gangster's Paradise as she was escorted to the stage.
Very nice.
Which was very, very cool.
Olivia Rodrigo sang with someone.
No doubt.
Right.
And Gwen Stefani looks amazing for her age, by the way. I want whatever she's got, I want.
Exactly.
Okay, anyway, to the small things. So... The WNBA draft tonight, you can check out our exclusive coverage here on ESPN, beginning with Elle Duncan co-hosting the 6 p.m. edition of SportsCenter live from Brooklyn, and then WNBA Countdown at 7. The draft is going to be at 7:30. All eyes are on Caitlin Clark as the number one pick, Indiana Fever, likely going to select Caitlin Clark. But all eyes were on her Saturday, guys, as she made a stop at Saturday Night Live. Now, we can't play the footage here, but she popped by Weekend Update with Colin Jost and Michael Che, and she was spectacular. She had a little compilation where, or actually Colin Jost did, where they played all of these jokes that Michael Che had made ripping on women's sports. And then Caitlin Clark in turn roasted him with some jokes of her own. But guys, I love to see this because this is just another example about how Caitlin Clark is transcending sports, transcending women's sports, and permeating pop culture. I love to see that on Saturday because I think that's such a good indicator that her popularity is going to carry over and have an impact into the WNBA.
Yeah, SNL means you're mainstream when it comes to American culture.
Big time.
No question about it.
And she brought teammates with her, too,
yeah,
to hang out there and watch.
The fact that you were involved with that, and now we're going to follow that up with your transition to the next level, I think that's going to be huge for the WNBA, and they'd be right to lean into that.
Lean
into all these young players coming into this league, Cameron Brink, Angel Reese, Camilla Cardoza. Lean into all of those coming into the league because it's clear that they've already got a level of star quality to them.
They're celebrities.
Before they even get to the league. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They're celebrities. They've got their own following, their own fan base. Lean into them and let them elevate the profile of the WNBA.
Absolutely. And obviously they're doing things around Caitlin Clark and the marketing and the national games that are going to be happening for the Fever so that people have access to her. But I really hope that this is captured, this momentum and this magnetism that we're seeing from Caitlin Clark and these other young stars that are jumping into the WNBA. I hope it's captured and I hope it translates, but Saturday was a great start for all of that.
And I give Che credit for being a punching bag as it was warranted with some of the previous jokes, but he's one of the head writers. So he leaned into the fact that like, hey, I'm an idiot. Like he's not really an idiot, but like for the show, he's an idiot. Like, beat me up a little bit.
He played the heel.
Yeah, it was great. It was great because it was good for the bit for women's sports and the positivity around it.
It was awesome. And Caitlin Clark, funny. She can tell a joke. I love that. Mm-hmm. Okay, next thing. One thing I certainly didn't love, Spencer Strider out for the season. The Braves announced it. So he suffered UCL damage, but he's already had Tommy John when he was back in Clemson in 2019. So he had a less serious surgery. It's called internal brace surgery, which means that the timeline is shorter than a traditional Tommy John surgery. He's still out for the entirety of the season, which is a huge blow, obviously, for the Braves. Strider 20-5 last season. He led Major League Baseball in strikeouts. And we are seeing so many big name pitchers, so many aces that are on the injured list, guys. And Major League Baseball has got to try to figure this out. I don't know if there's a way for them to find a solution to this problem with guys throwing max effort and constantly having arm problems. But Verlander, Kershaw, Scherzer, DeGrom, Cole, Sandy Alcantara, Bieber, now Strider. There's just so many big name pitchers that are injured and it sucks for the sport. Part of the reason that we tune into sports is because we want to see greatness and so many of these pitchers are not available for us to watch. It sucks.
That's a huge problem. Is there a solution to this?
I think it starts much earlier than when they get to the majors because so many of these guys now are coming up and they're throwing max effort. There's so much wear and tear on their arms. I don't know if you can adjust it.
I know what you're thinking.
Sticky stuff on the ball? Yeah, is that where you're going?
Why not?
They've complained about it.
Let them use the spider tag. You get more revolutions, more RPMs. Let them use it. Let them use it. I don't understand it. Let them use it. I mean, you've had big league hitters in the past say, I'd prefer that these guys have better grip on the ball, especially with how hard they're throwing the baseball, mm-hmm. 100 miles an hour plus. Like, let them use the spider tech so they have more control. Maybe they have a better way to be able to pitch where they're not blowing out their UCL every other year. So it just seems like that will be something that makes sense. But Smalls, I'm a conspiracy theorist when it comes to those types of things.
Oh, I love it.
Well, I'm just sitting there thinking, like, the highest paid players in the sport on an average annual value basis are always the pitchers. Maybe this might be Major League Baseball's way of knocking down the going rate for Cy Young level pitchers.
Well,
I'm just saying, maybe this might be their way of just saying, you know what? These pitcher salaries are getting out of control. If we start seeing the trend toward more injuries or higher injury rates when it comes to the top names in the sport, maybe we can justify not paying those guys these kind of contracts.
Well, baseball does have a huge history of getting in their own way, but that would be the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Let's take our stars out of the game because of injuries. Let's cheapen our product by having lesser competition out there. That would be like the NFL saying, let's not protect the quarterback so much so we don't have to pay the Patrick Mahomes of the world $500 million. That's literally would be the dumbest thing ever.
I agree.
But Major League Baseball does get in their own
way. That's my point.
Look, also, capped sport versus uncapped sport.
Correct.
Right? So you have no other way of limiting the dollars unless you put some sort of cap in there.
Well, then do that rather than find a way to not have your marquee names competing in your sport.
I'm not saying you're trying to get the guys hurt, but it's just like, okay, if this is an unintended consequence, we're not going to be upset about it because now we don't have to worry about the salaries being out of control.
But guys are still getting paid, though, coming off Tommy John. It's not as if they're not cashing in those big contracts because it's so commonplace now. It's not if you're going to have Tommy John surgery. It's typically when. Okay, last thing, guys. If Mark Pope's tenure at Kentucky is anything like his introductory press conference, I think Big Blue Nation is in good hands. His entrance was so cool. He rolled up into Rupp Arena with the 96 Kentucky championship team. They had the hardware. They had the trophy. It was a packed arena, absolutely sold out. It was such a scene. I love the welcome for Pope. And like I said, if this entrance and this welcome was anything like his tenure, I think they made the right hire.
This was an amazing day yesterday because they sold out Rupp for a press conference. What's interesting is the old school Kentucky fans are back in a big way. They're probably going to donate money to the NIL. They're remotivated a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're now going to skip a generation of Kentucky basketball, though. All of the one-and-done guys are going to be somewhat forgotten about, at least for right now, because they're going to go with Calipari. And the 90s guys are going to be the ones that are going to return to the program. Mm-hmm. Successful both ways, but Kentucky basketball, a lot different now.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.